Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
So Matt, why are accountants always depressed?
I don't know.
Because it's a cruel world.
Oh God. Did Ashley laugh at that?
No, she didn't.
Good, good.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales. All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm a little dumber after that joke.
I hear you. I'm dumber after reading it to you, and I was dumber after the first time I read it. So, before we get into it, we want to say go check out the Podbelly Network at podbelly.com. You can find a list of shows that we're happy to be associated with, and you can find some tips and tricks on podcasting if you're looking into getting into that. Now, before we get into the rest of the housekeeping, I just want to say Ashley has been on me about this. I have been real bad about this. I keep forgetting to thank the people who have sent us stuff to the P.O. box. And it's been months that we have gotten stuff and I have forgotten to say anything.
So tonight's show, we're going to thank each one of you individually.
Yeah, individually. It'll be an hour of thank yous just back to, no. Did want to say thank you to the person who sent us the nut roll candy that we talked about in an episode. That was good. Never had it before. I still think it's a interesting piece of candy, but it's kind of like a payday, but not really. So thank you for sending those and letting us try those.
You'd never had one like that?
Not a nut roll, no.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah, I like them.
Yeah, I never had one.
It was like you used to, I don't know if there's any Stuckey's left, but that used to be able to buy that pecan nut roll there. It's very, very similar. Yeah. Good.
Yeah. I think there are Stuckey's left, but not anywhere around us.
I was going to say there's none that I see that I used to see pretty routinely.
I think I ran across some driving to Virginia.
Yeah. I imagine there's probably some left, but I don't know of any here.
But also thank you to the person who sent us the coloring book. We did get that. Thank you. And if you plan on sending us anything, I promise I will be better about thanking the people as we get the stuff in, instead of waiting 6 months to thank you for what you sent.
Yeah.
But the PO box is down in the show notes if you want to send us something. And like I said, I promise I will be better. And Ashley said she will beat me more frequently, so that I say something. But we also want to say go check out patreon.com/graveyardtales. Sign up to become a patron. We've got 3 different levels that you can sign up for, $1, $5, and $10. And our $10, they get the newer show that we're doing, Side Quest, where it's nothing like Graveyard Tales. It's blue. We make dirty jokes and it just random topics, stuff that happens in our lives. We talk about, sometimes we bring stuff to the table that we want to make the other one laugh about, whatever. It's, I like it. It's a fun side quest from doing Graveyard Tales.
It's absolutely ridiculous, but it's a lot of fun to do, and we have a good time with it. And I think everybody that has been listening to it has found something in it that they've really mm-hmm. enjoyed. At least that's the feedback we're getting. So check it out. I mean, like, we've got what, like 30 episodes now.
Yep.
So, you know, it's no longer a new show.
Yeah.
So there's a good back catalog to catch up on. So, you know, have at it. I mean, there's something in there that you're going to find hilarious. I promise.
Yeah. Yep. And all of our levels get a bonus episode a week, and our $5 and $10 get the ad free versions of the main episodes when we have ads. Speaking of ads, go into our show notes, use our ad sponsors codes at their websites, use our vanity codes, all that stuff, get you something. That's the biggest way that you can help out Graveyard Tales. If you don't want to sign up to become a patron, mm-hmm. using our sponsor codes will help us out tremendously, because that shows them, hey, you know, it pays to advertise on Graveyard Tales, and so we're going to keep doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And just an aside to that, right now, we have got some fantastic sponsors
mm-hmm.
that make incredible products. I posted about one
yep.
In the Facebook group. You know, we're not just asking you to do this just to get some crap that will help the show. I mean, right. we have got some top-notch sponsors right now that make fantastic products that we think you'll love, because we love them.
Yep. I'm using two of our sponsors' products as we speak. I'm wearing my MeUndies, and I've got CB Distillery on my neck.
That's right.
So yeah. Two of our sponsors are helping me get through this show.
Oh, man. Yeah. I've got the whole family on
yep.
the CB Distillery stuff. It's yep. it's amazing.
Yep. But one more thing before we get going. If you're watching the video, yes, the cabinet behind me is dark. It's because slowly, as we've been talking before the show started, my lights have started dying. So I've got some charging. Hopefully, you know, by the Patreon and side quest we record tonight, I'll have lights again. But as for now, I have one single light right back there
yep.
that is working. The rest of them are dark. So, hey, there's nothing to focus on but me in this episode. Sorry. But Matt, that's all I've got for the housekeeping. So why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
Well, I wish I could have some background music, but we're too cheap to pay. But yep. that bow, 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 bow. Very superstitious. I mean,
writing on the wall.
You got it, man. Tonight we're talking about superstitions. And I can't believe we haven't thought of doing this before. But I learned a lot about some of these superstitions, because I knew what they were, and I kind of knew why you did it. But I never really understood the history behind it, like
right.
where it started. And, you know, why would somebody be worried if a black cat crossed their path? You know, yeah. why don't you walk under a ladder? We're going to look at those things and give you kind of the background, and we're going to talk about, like, how superstitions came to be, you know, just in general, you know, the history of people doing these weird little things. And I don't know about you, Adam, and I am not a superstitious guy. I'm a little stitious.
Mm-hmm. I knew that joke was going to happen this episode. Yep. I didn't know if it'd be you or me that did it first, but I knew it was going to happen.
But there are things that I do that I know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I'm telling you, I will throw. Look, the other day I was cooking and I spilled some salt, and I just, without even thinking, I grabbed it up and I threw it over my shoulder.
Yep.
Now, it just so happens that when I did that, I did kind of a little dance move when I did it, because it was seasoned salt. So, you know, I thought, well, I got to spice this up a little.
I thought you were going to say right as you did that, Brooks walked by and you hit him in the face with the salt.
I would have probably done that too. but let's get into it. So Adam's gonna talk about the history behind superstitions and how they came to be, and then I'm gonna dig into to a few of them and talk about where they specifically originated, or at least where we think they did.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we always say, go check our sources down at the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found all this information, and you can keep going. As with a lot of mine, my notes, they come directly from, you know, medical sources, history sources, stuff like that. So those websites are down in the show notes that you can keep going, because I'm not going to hit all of it. I'm just going to hit the high points. I did want to say that the reason I brought up doing superstitions is because Ashley has said a couple times when I bring up superstitions, she's like, you need to do it. I'm like, I know, it's on our list. And she's like, no, you need to do it.
Yeah.
And so she had just told me that we needed to do it. And Matt and I had a topic that we were going to do. Something fell through, so we had to call an audible. And so superstitions came up, and we were both like, yeah, let's do that. So that's kind of, thanks Ashley for the nudge into this topic.
Righto.
Now, what is a superstition? Well, Oxford Dictionary, it's got a couple of different definitions for superstitions. One is excessively credulous belief in and reverence for supernatural beings. The other one is a widely held but unjustified belief in supernatural causation leading to certain consequences of an action or event or a practice based on such a belief. So the second one is what we're going to be covering mostly tonight. But apparently, they say, like, if you believe in Bigfoot, if you believe in ghosts, that's superstitious as well. So, yeah. I mean, I see and I've heard that before, but when I hear superstition or somebody is superstitious, I don't think, oh, they're superstitious, they believe in Bigfoot.
Well, another thing I found that was interesting, I thought, was like Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day is considered to be a superstition. And I guess I always equated superstitions with you do something so something bad doesn't happen to you or somebody mm-hmm. else. Okay.
Yeah.
I never thought about just, you know, in general, the idea that the groundhog seeing his shadow and there being six more weeks of winter.
Mm-hmm.
That would be considered a superstition, but
yeah,
it in a lot of cultures that is.
Sure. Yeah. Yep. I guess that can fall under the first definition.
Yeah.
Of superstitions, but a lot of what I've got comes from Medical News Today. Some of it also from Scientific American and WebMD. So all of that's kind of mixed in together here, but there's billions of people in the United States and across the world that are superstitious. And in fact, a quarter of adults in the U.S. consider themselves to be so. But recent trends are actually showing that the younger generations are more superstitious than the older generations, which to me feels like it would be backwards.
True. Yeah.
You know, you think, oh, older generations would be more superstitious, especially considering the origins of a lot of the superstitions we're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But 70% of U.S. students say they rely on good luck charms for better academic performance.
Huh.
So it's interesting that the younger generations, like, apparently it's a ebb and flow kind of thing where, you know, several generations ago, very superstitious, then it went away and it's coming back again,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting to me. But I mean, maybe I see some correlation because the newer generations are talking about ghosts and paranormal stuff more than like our parents and our grandparents did. So
I would definitely agree with that. Yeah. Because when I talk to my grandmother, who's 94, about this show, you know, she thinks it's, she's proud that I do it. She thinks the stuff we talk about is a little silly.
Is hooey.
Yeah. I mean, it's just her.
Same with my grandparents and my parents, that they don't listen to the show. They're happy that we're doing it and that, you know, we have something that we're passionate about, but they don't believe in ghosts much. And if they do, they don't talk about it. They may believe in it, but they're like, hey, I don't want to bring that on me, so I'm not going to talk about it.
Yeah. What's funny, though, is my other grandmother, my granny, my mom's mom, she was very superstitious. In fact, a lot of the things that I knew about superstitions, I learned from her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, because I was the kid that was getting hit in the face with the salt when she's in there making biscuits. Mm-hmm. And she's like, bloop. I was like, why are you throwing salt at me? You know?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Now, this says that most people who are superstitious about certain things also say that they understand that it's probably silly and doesn't do anything, but they still keep up the superstitions just to be safe.
Yeah.
An example that I ran across, and you may have seen this too, or you may have heard this in the past. Now, however you feel about Patrick Mahomes, we're not going to get into that, but apparently in 2017, he got on a win streak while wearing a red pair of underwear. So now he only wears that red pair of underwear in games. And if they're on a win streak, he won't wash it between the games. He only washes them if they lose. So I'm sorry, but no matter how superstitious I am, it's not going to be unwashed underwear. I may have lucky underwear, you know, but they're going to be clean, lucky underwear. I am not wearing butt and giblet funk in my underwear game after game.
So my immediate family, you know, my parents, my sister, of course, growing up in Nashville, we rooted for Vanderbilt football, but they were terrible. Not that they're a lot better now. They're having a better year now, but when I was a kid, I kind of adopted another college as my team.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And because of that, my whole family became fans of them and are to this day. And We have a lot of things that we do. I can remember watching a game where they were doing just horribly. And I was like, I can't watch this. And I went and was standing in the kitchen. And while I was in the kitchen, they started doing better and coming back. And my mom wouldn't let me come back in the living room.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching the game from the kitchen into the living room. Okay. If you get a new team shirt, a new t-shirt or a jersey or something, you can't wear it for a big game until it has a win on it, as my sister says.
Yeah.
So you wear it when there's a game, you know, oh, they're going to blow this team away, so that the shirt has a win. So you can wear it. And they, you know, it's funny.
We're the same way here.
I don't even think about it until we start to kind of talk about it. And I'm like, we do a lot of that crazy stuff.
Dude, we're the same way here. Like my Cowboys hat.
Yeah.
If I'm wearing it and we start losing, I take it off. Ashley has a shirt that she wears every Cowboy game for that reason. Now, the last Cowboy game, I'm very disappointed in the Cowboys this year, but that's beside the point. The last Cowboy game, they were sucking butthole the whole game. Well, so we decided, okay, we've got to go run some errands. So we're watching the game on her phone while we're going and doing stuff.
Yeah.
We went in JCPenney, looking for a suit for me and Michael. But we went in JCPenney at the last few minutes of the game, and they started doing better. They came back and lost by 1 point.
Oh, yeah. I was watching that
game. So Ashley was like, maybe I need to stay in JCPenney for the rest of this game.
Yes.
And I was like, maybe you do.
That's so funny.
We walked out to the truck at the last minute or two.
Yeah.
And they lost by 1 point. And she's like, dang it. I should have stayed in the store.
Right.
And I was like, yes. Yeah, we probably should have. But yeah. We do that same thing here. Ashley was just saying, I need to get another cowboy shirt because this one isn't working this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, yeah, you do. I'll get one.
We pull for the Cowboys here too, because, you know, Amanda is, you know, from grew up, you know, all of her formative years were spent in Texas. So, mm-hmm. You know, we follow the Cowboys here, and, you know, it's good because the Titans usually play early and the Cowboys play the late game. Yep. But boy, I tell you, the Titans this year, not to branch off, but it's like the old joke, you know, what are the Titans and the Pope have in common? It's like, you know, they're the only two things that can make a crowd of 65,000 stand up and yell Jesus Christ at the same time.
Yeah. Yep. It's true. I could never get into the Titans. When the Cowboys made me mad, I just had to stop.
I mean, yep. The two teams that I pull for, it's brutal being a fan.
Yeah, it is. It's hard enough being a Cowboys fan. It's rough being both their fans.
I'm telling you.
So you're just depressed all the time, aren't you? Yeah,
well, I don't let it bother me anymore. You know, I want them to win. I don't get real sad when they don't, but I just kind of like, true. I watch it and I'm like, come on.
Mm-hmm. You know? That's the exact sentiment all Cowboy fans are having this year. But anyway, we'll get back to it. That was a diversion. Now, Jane Risen is a professor of behavioral science at the University of Chicago Booth in Illinois, and she's a member of the American Psychological Society. And she's used the so-called dual process model of cognition to explain our belief in superstitions. According to Risen and other renowned authors such as Daniel Kahneman, humans can think both fast and slow. The former mode of thinking is snappy and intuitive, while the latter is more rational, and its main job is to override the intuitive judgment when it finds errors. So the dual thinking model is an established one, but in the case of superstitions, Risen suggests that the model should undergo refinements. The researcher notes that error detection does not automatically involve error correction. So in other words, people can realize that their belief is wrong, but still act on it.
Sure.
So sometimes superstitions can have a soothing effect, relieving anxiety about the unknown and giving people a sense of control over their lives. It says this may also be the reason why superstitions have survived for so long. People have passed them on from generation to generation.
Mm-hmm.
This says, as an article appearing in the International Journal of Psychology and Behavioral Science states, quote, superstition has its roots in our species' youth, when our ancestors could not understand the forces and whims of the natural world. Survival of our ancestors was threatened by predation and other natural forces, end quote. So as a result, superstitions have evolved to produce a false sense of having control over outer conditions and reduce anxiety. This is also why superstitions are prevalent in conditions of absence of confidence, insecurity, fear, and threat. So what they're saying is that, you know, when we were a younger species and we didn't have the scientific knowledge of the way the world worked and everything, that's when the superstitions developed. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't understand why earthquakes happen. So we are sacrificing stuff to the gods to stop the earthquake,
yeah,
or to end the drought or something. And that's where a lot of these superstitions began. Or not a lot of the superstitions, but the fact that we have superstitions.
Yes. Yeah.
That began belief. yeah, began back then to help us try to have some kind of sense of control over the world that we live in.
And I think there's a bias in there that if you do something a certain way and it works in your favor, then that little voice in your head says, if you do it again this way, it will work out in your favor again. And, you know, it may have only happened one time, but yet you continue to do it, just like you said, in the face of evidence that shows you what you're doing has no bearing on this at all.
Yep. Your rational brain goes, dude,
but
no.
You do it. But, yep. And sometimes I think we build that anxiety ourselves, that you begin to think, if I don't do it, then the outcome will be negative.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
if I don't touch this thing when I go into this particular room, something is going to be bad when I get in here. Something's not going to work out. If I don't wear the red underwear this game, we're going to lose.
Yep. If I don't smack Ashley on the butt before she leaves the house, something bad could happen to me. So I've got to get that. That's at least what I tell her why I do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, this goes on to say that by alleviating anxiety, superstitions may objectively improve performance.
Yeah.
So Stuart Weiss, author of Believing in Magic, The Psychological and Superstition Psychology of Superstition, and former professor of psychology at Connecticut College, explains in an interview for the British Psychological Society, he says, quote, there is evidence that positive luck-enhancing superstitions provide a psychological benefit that can improve skilled performance. There is anxiety associated with the kinds of events that bring out superstition. The absence of control over an important outcome creates anxiety. So even when we know on a rational level that there is no magic, superstitions can be maintained by their emotional benefit, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes on to say that indeed, one study that examined performance in golfing, so motor dexterity, memory, and anagram games, found that making gestures such as keeping one's fingers crossed or uttering words such as break a leg or good luck boosted the participant's performance. So it goes back to that you feel like this is going to help you, and therefore it does help you. It's a placebo type effect.
Yeah, yeah.
It says the mechanism is mediated by increased self-confidence, writes the authors. Quote, these performance benefits are produced by changes in perceived self-efficacy. Activating a superstition boosts participants' confidence in mastering upcoming tasks, which in turn improves performance. Once you know that a superstition applies, people don't want to tempt fate by not employing it, says Weiss. He goes on to cite an example of a chain letter that became famous among journalists in the U.S. He says, many of these journalists knew that it was bunk, but they did not want to tempt fate by not copying the letter and sending it on. So you remember those emails.
Oh, yeah. I remember getting them in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, going, and I remember being a kid and getting one, and I was like, what is this? And so, you know, I remember mom explaining to me what this chain letter was. That is one thing, I think, because it irritates me so that I don't want to irritate anybody else with it. So I don't ever send them on.
I never copied and pasted the chain letters. Maybe that's why I'm not a millionaire.
Hey,
today.
You know, I know,
but
could have been a millionaire tomorrow if I sent this to 25 people.
Mm-hmm, exactly. It says, however, not tempting fate is also a popular option because the cost of abiding by the superstition are very low compared to the potential outcome. One study confirms this and explains that superstitions appeal to people because the advantages of carrying around a lucky charm, for example, outweigh the disadvantages. A so-called costly exploration scenario, a situation where a person must explore an uncertain environment, would come into play.
Mm-hmm.
So Medical News Today spoke to several people who said their superstitions tie into their OCD. Now, I'm going to preface this by saying I don't think this pertains, but it is looked at in the psychological and medical fields as pertaining to superstition. So we're going to briefly touch on it.
Yeah.
But I don't think this correlates, and I'll explain why. One explained that they had to pick up the correct pair of socks for that day or their mom would die. So it sounds like, oh yeah, that fits, but I don't think they do. Established research recognizes superstitions as an example of compulsions performed in response to obsessions, along with excessive hand washing, ritualized bathing or grooming, checking behaviors, mental rituals. They need to repeat activities and rereading text and hoarding behaviors, all kind of lumping together. However, there has been much debate surrounding the issue of whether OCD and superstitions share a continuum. So many researchers suggest that they do not, pointing out superstitions and OCD use different brain areas.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think just because the behavior is similar.
Yeah.
That some scientists go, well, see, it's this way. It's an obsessive compulsive trait rather than whatever. But other scientists are going, no, because if you look at OCD, that is a disorder,
right,
that affects some percentage of the human race. And it's something that they can't stop. They can't control.
Exactly.
Whereas somebody with a superstition can control it, can stop it. So I think to tie it in together, it doesn't do justice to either one of them trying to look at them individually.
I agree 100%. And earlier when we were talking about some things, I thought of something and I was like, no, that's OCD. It's something totally different. At least, you know, mm-hmm. in my eyes, and I think you agree. But the idea that if I didn't do whatever superstitious thing I did, if I didn't, you know, if I didn't do I used to do little weird things with the baseball when I was a pitcher. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was just a certain thing I would do. It didn't really affect anything about how I pitched or what I did. It was just kind of a routine. I'd never got to a point where I thought, if I don't do this for some reason, I'm not going to do well. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But with OCD, it's more of a, I have to do this.
Yeah.
If I don't do it, I'm not going to be able to move on to the next thing until right. I do it, because my right. brain won't let me, because it will become my entire focus mm-hmm. is I have to do this.
All right, y'all. So spark something uncommon this holiday season with incredible hand-picked gifts from Uncommon Goods. They'll make your holiday shopping stress-free by scouring the globe for original, handmade, and absolutely remarkable things for everyone on your list. These gifts spark joy, wonder, delight, and that's exactly what I wanted feeling. If you ever had that, Matt, where you get something and you're like, that is exactly what I wanted? How did you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. And it's usually the things that are uncommon. You know, it's not something that you can just go to a big box store and get.
Right.
And I mean, I know men, we're notorious for for shopping late with things. But take it from me, instead of doing that, start early and start shopping on uncommon goods, and you can knock out your whole family before your wife has even started, and you can sit back and gloat this year and go, look, I'm already done.
I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm out.
And whether you're shopping for Secret Santa or your entire family, it's great. And I did this last year, and I'm doing it again this year, Matt. I'm getting Ashley something on there for Christmas. Plus, I got a little bonus thing just as a good husband gift that I'm going to give her randomly. Because
Oh, I thought you meant like a good husband gift for yourself.
No, I do that enough, and I don't need to do that again. I've been a good boy. I'm going to get me this. Yeah, no,
that's right.
This is a thing I've probably screwed up, so I'm going to get this and give it to her just to make up for it. But she loves olives, and they have an olive variety pack on there that you can get olives from, you know, Italy and all different places.
The moon.
You can get moon olives. And but it's really cool because I've heard about this but never seen it. So I got her an olive variety pack that I can get her, and she's going to love it.
Dude, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when you've got to find something that is not just unusual or unique, but is going to speak to that person that you're giving the gift to, you know, you find that, you know, when you see it, they got to have this, you know, it's like, it's what my family does when they find some random Grateful Dead thing. Matt's got to have this.
Or what I do when I see Ungrateful Dead, Matt's got to have this.
Exactly. I got everybody working for me. But when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. So many of their products are handcrafted and made in small batches. So you got to shop early or they'll sell out. You know, this stuff is not, you know, mass produced.
Right.
Know, these are artisans that are making a lot of these products, and they can't make them in bulk, and you don't want them to because you don't want somebody else to have the same thing. Yeah, Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and as I said, often handmade right here in the United States. They have the most meaningful, out of the ordinary gifts anywhere. They even have gifts you can personalize, and you've done that.
Yep.
But with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date. That's awesome.
It's incredible.
To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/great. That's G-R-A-V-E.
That's right. That's uncommongoods.com/GRAVE, and you'll get 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
If you're ever interested, you can go and read about OCD a lot, and there's a lot of information out there about it. There's a lot of people that will, you know, kind of make, oh, that's just my OCD. They make jokes about it, but it's not. It's not a joke. It is a serious condition.
Right.
Mark Summers, who was the host of Double Dare when I was a kid, he was the host on Unwrapped, the show where they showed you how different candies were made. Okay. And he's also a comedian. He really fascinating guy. He has a lot out there because he deals with OCD. And it's not a superstition. And I don't think that superstitions would lead you to OCD. You know, you may be really serious about the superstition that you follow for whatever reason. But again, you're not so overwhelmed by it that it dictates your life. And
right.
With OCD in severe cases, It does for these people. So I'm with you. I think this is two different things we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm. Yep, 100%. Now, finish this up. Paul Foxman, PhD, an anxiety expert from Burlington, Vermont, says there is a positive placebo effect, like I mentioned. If you think something will help you, it may do just that. Quote, there is a tremendous amount of power in belief, he says. If the outcome is a matter of pure luck, beliefs don't really have any impact. However, when your performance is a key factor in an outcome, superstitious thinking might give you an extra boost. Quote, there can be a real psychological effect of superstitious thoughts, says Weiss, who we talked about before. If you've done well before when you had a particular shirt on, for example, it might prove wise to wear the shirt again. Patrick Mahomes in his underwear. Mm-hmm. If it helps to relieve anxiety and promotes positive thoughts. But this way of thinking can also hinder your performance if, say, you lose your lucky object.
True enough. So, yeah.
You know, I used to have a lucky coin that I carried around everywhere. And I knew in my head that this did nothing. But I still carried around just in case. I didn't want to tempt it. And then I did lose it. And so for a while, I was all anxious thinking something bad was about to happen. Nothing ever did. Mm-hmm. So I got over that. But another superstition you can think of is when my grandfather passed away, my mom's dad, it was within a string of a lot of other bad things happening. So I thought, oh, I'm going to go get four-leaf clovers tattooed on my arms, mm-hmm. and maybe that'll help. You can consider that superstitious if you want to, but I've always got my, you know, quote-unquote lucky charms on me, even though I know these don't do crap. I've still had bad luck with them tattooed on me.
You,
so
you should have got them like the marshmallows.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can still do that. And then go, see, I've got me lucky charms.
Yeah. I can still do that. I can get the rest of them tattooed up my arm, you know, the star, the moon.
That one three dimensional, you know, mm-hmm. on the side. So it kind of looks like you.
Yeah, there you go. But talking about the difference between superstitions and OCD, I don't have OCD. I have had friends with OCD, so I know that I don't have OCD. But I do have obsessive behaviors, and one of those being I cannot go to bed until I have checked all doors and windows.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And Ashley knows this. So the other night, I checked all the doors and stuff and didn't set the alarm yet. And I went upstairs and then I came back downstairs and grabbed something and we both walked upstairs. As we're getting upstairs, she goes, did you check the doors? And I said, yep. She goes, are you sure? I said, yep. She goes, how do you know I didn't go out one? I was like, why do you do this to me?
Right.
She knew what she was messing with me. So I had to go back downstairs and recheck all of them. Now, that's not a similar superstition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amanda does similar. She will worry about mm-hmm. it. Like,
I can't sleep unless I know I've checked it.
Like if we're going to be leaving the house and the house is going to be empty, she has to look at both dogs in the face. Mm-hmm. Before she leaves, because the, you know, bulldogs don't do well in extreme weather. So they're mm-hmm. not outside dogs. They're just not. I mean, they go out there and they play, but they get hot real easy and they don't deal with cold very well. So there's always been this fear that we're going to accidentally leave one of them outside and leave the house.
Yeah.
So, you know, she goes, look, I know you told me, you know, you saw both dogs, but it's just my thing. I have to look at them. I have to see them myself. And I get it. There are things like that I know I do. It's just those, to me, those are just little odd, you know, idiosyncrasies that we do, just to make ourselves feel better.
Yeah.
You know, I guess that could be considered, you know, a superstition, but I don't think it's not so much that you think something bad is going to happen. It's like you don't want anything bad to happen, and you want to make sure 100% that you've checked and double checked. Mm-hmm. And that way you can say, okay, I do not have to think about this anymore.
Right. Right.
All right. So, Adam, let's look at a few of the most common ones, and we'll talk a little bit about where they come from, how they started, and you know why people would do this at all. And the first one, and I'm going to start with this one because the website that I got the majority of this information from is really weird. Okay, it's got a background that is dynamic. It moves and changes as you scroll, and things mm-hmm. get further away, and it makes reading it damn near impossible. But
dude, that it's a terrible website design.
It's been up, terrible. It's been up on my screen, and there's one of these creepy guys in the background, and he's been staring at me. So I want to get this one over with, so I can scroll away from this.
Just get it done.
Yeah. All right. So knocking on wood. Mm-hmm. You better knock on wood. You know, you say yep. something. Oh, well, that's never going to happen. Well, you better knock on wood.
Yep, we do that one.
Yeah. You know, why? I mean, everybody, you know, oh, yep, better knock on wood. But, I mean, this is probably one of the most common that you hear. And the actual origins of knocking on wood and even the meanings of that phrase, there's a lot. There's a lot to it. It's not, you can't narrow this one down to, you know, one specific thing. It's all cultural. Some suggest that the roots are in the Indo-European or Celtic belief that spirits, both good and bad, resided in trees who could either be called upon for protection or chased away by knocking on their home. Hmm. And others, particularly Christians, link the practice of knocking on wood to the magical power of the wooden crucifix. Yeah. I had heard neither one of these.
Okay? Me either.
I certainly never thought knocking on wood was anything about, you know, the crucifix. That never occurred to me. But among the different theories, historians have attributed the knocking on wood superstition to a 19th century British children's game called Tiggy Touchwood. And
that sounds naughty.
I know.
Why do so many British children's games sound naughty?
I know. I went to high school with a girl we called Tiggy Touchwood. No.
Yeah, if I heard Michael was playing that, we would have a discussion about keeping your hands to yourself.
That's right. It's like, you know, why don't you play Spin the Bottle or 7 Minutes in Heaven like the rest of us? You know why?
Yeah.
But in Tiggy Touchwood, the players claimed immunity from being tagged by touching the nearest piece of wood. Adults picked up on the habit and the phrase. The British still say touch wood, and the rest is history. But as with many superstitions, there are some subtle variations and sometimes not so subtle varying origins. Like Italians touch steel rather than wood. And that's probably more related to iron horseshoes. Polish people and Russian people touch unpainted wood. People from Turkey tend to knock twice. In Latin America, people have a tendency to knock on wood with no legs. So chairs and tables don't count.
Oh, I thought you meant the people have no legs.
What if they have wooden legs?
Oh, Jesus.
So it's like a pirate. You know, you can't knock on a pirate.
Polly Peg Leg is just in trouble.
But going back to the thing about the spirits, pagans used to believe that you could knock on the wood of the tree. You were thanking the spirits when something good would happen. So, you know, it all depends on where you came across it, the culture you grew up in.
Yeah. It's very regional. A lot of superstitions are probably pretty regional.
Yeah. Yeah. And they even have said, like, Jewish people may do this because it dates back to knocking on the wooden doors of synagogues while they were seeking shelter during the Spanish Inquisition.
Mm.
You know, so a lot of different theories as to where knocking on wood came from. But, you know, I'm telling you, if you come to my house, probably at any point, somebody's going to go, you better knock on wood, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. How about this one? This is one I've talked about a lot. Throwing salt over your shoulder. Okay. So if you spill salt, you're supposed to throw some over your shoulder to prevent you from having bad luck. This is another one of the most common superstitions in the West, for sure. And like knocking on wood, it involves the idea of we're warding off evil. But in this case, it's the devil himself.
Yep.
So in Leonardo da Vinci's The Last Supper, Jesus's betrayer, Judas Iscariot, is portrayed as having accidentally spilled salt.
Hmm.
I did not know that.
I didn't either.
Since Judas was associated with doing something bad, the argument goes that salt was bad, and throwing it over your shoulder would blind the devil waiting there.
I always heard that you threw it over your shoulder to blind the devil sneaking up on you because you spilled the salt.
Yep.
But I never heard the Judas knocking over the salt.
Yeah. And it's funny, if you look at the image of the last, I don't know how you could tell that somebody had actually spilled salt. I don't.
Well, that's what I was about
I,
to do.
I don't see it, but I may not be looking at the best image of this, but I don't see any salt being spilled. Adam, let me take a guess at this. Your medicine cabinet, because I know you, is crammed with stuff that doesn't work.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, mine is too.
Yep.
I mean, I am a supplement junkie.
Mm-hmm.
Looking for anything that will help, you know.
make
me feel better, you know. But the one thing that you and I both deal with is, you know, chronic pain, you know, difficulty sleeping. But you know, if you're not sleeping and you still hurt and you're stressed out, then you get to join Adam and I in that club. It's not a club you really want to be a part of. So I got some products from CB Distiller.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, now that I've used them, I've cleared out my cabinet and reset everything.
Yeah.
Because of CB Distillery.
That's
It has been a real change. CB Distillery's targeted formulation are made from the highest quality, clean ingredients. Okay. And look, the day I got my order, my shoulder was absolutely killing me. I deal with chronic shoulder pain from years of playing, you know, football and baseball. And it all catches up to you. And you know, immediately I opened up my package and pulled out the topical, looks like a stick of deodorant, and just rubbed it into my shoulder. I'm not kidding. I told you this when it happened. I could not drive with my left arm.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't do it. And by the time I left the house and got up to Piper School, my arm felt good. I could drive with it again. It was that fast and that good.
I know, it's incredible.
So it's just incredible.
Yeah, and the one of the cool things with that, Matt, you know that I had a call with the doctor who works with CB Distillery before we started doing this stuff. And he was saying one of the things that differentiates their product is that they have small enough CBD molecules that it can actually soak into the inflammation and fix the inflammation, where a lot of the ones you get, whether online or you know, in the drugstore, they don't. They just go on as a greasy thing and then nothing happens.
Right.
And like you, I've got chronic neck pain. That stuff has been a game changer. I put it on before I go to bed and I wake up and I don't have neck pain the whole next day. It's incredible.
It's awesome.
I shared some of the oral CBD oil with my dad and stepmom because they deal with leg pain because they're old. I mean, like we are, they're old. So they got body pains. And my stepmom, the next time I saw her, she goes, "Man, that is the best CBD I have tried. It really works, and I really get a good night's sleep with it." Because the leg pain would wake them up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it, like Matt said, there's no fluff, no fillers. There's just pure, effective CBD solutions designed to help support your health. And in two non-clinical surveys, 81% of customers experienced more calm, 80% said CBD helped with pain after physical activity, and an impressive 90% said they slept better with the CB Distillery CBD. And you've got to go to the website and look it up. They've got something for everybody. They've got stuff for your pets. My pets are on CBD. It really helps my old dog with his mobility.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, there's no better CBD that Matt and I have found. Y'all know, we have talked about CBD in the past. All the rest of that CBD is getting thrown away because we found CB Distillery. And with over 2 million customers and a solid 100% money-back guarantee, CB Distillery is the source that you can trust. Now, you can get 20% off whenever you're ready to get started. And all you've got to do is go to cbdistillery.com and use our code GRAVE, G-R-A-V-E, and it'll get you 20% off.
Yeah, that's right. And don't get me started on the gummies. I love their gummies. It would be a 10-minute ad, so we're not going to do that. We'll talk about them next time, but go and find some of these products because I guarantee they will help. CB Distillery guarantees they're a help, or you get 100% of your money back.
Right.
That's cbdistillery.com, code GRAVE, G-R-A-V-E, cbdistillery.com. But in other versions of the superstition, Old Scratch was thought to reside just over your left shoulder, ready to tempt you. And so the salt was always thrown to the left. Hmm. I don't do that. I never knew that which shoulder made a difference. Others say that the sheer value of salt alone in ancient times led to the belief that to spill it was to incur bad fortune, requiring a corresponding ritual or act of penance to prevent worse loss from occurring. So salt's expensive. Oh. If you spill it, that's bad. You better do something or more bad fortune is going to come your way.
Yep. I just looked this up and I searched Last Summer Supper painting close-up of Judas. Mm-hmm. And when they do a close-up of Judas, sure enough, his right hand has knocked over a well of salt, and the salt is spilling out onto the table.
I was hoping so much that it was like a salt shaker, like a modern-day salt. And it's like, how did that get in there?
Right, like a time travel thing?
Yeah. Look at the ass on the top, you know? So.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those plastic ones from the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah.
The plastic salt and pepper that kind of had the hourglass look to it.
The old Tupperware ones, you know, they're real tall.
Exactly. You know? Yep.
The holes make an S, you know?
Yep.
Well, how about this one, Adam? if you're walking along and somebody's got a ladder up against a wall, you going to walk under it?
No.
Well, me either, but probably more because it would make my trip more inconvenient for me to go out of my way to go under the ladder.
Well, and even if not, mine's not out of superstition. Mine's like, what if this ladder falls?
Right.
Yeah, I don't want to tempt not the superstition thing, but tempt fate and this ladder falling on
exactly.
me. Exactly. Or somebody dropping something from the ladder.
But yeah, that's how you get covered in paint, folks. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But the superstition of not wanting to walk under a ladder also has roots in Christian symbolism. The Holy Trinity of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit led to an association of the number three with something sacred. The triangle, with its three sides, came to be regarded as sacred. And a ladder, of course, forms a triangle. So naturally, to walk under that ladder would be to destroy the sanctity of the Trinity and thus incur its punishment. Now, that's interesting because I would have never, ever, ever guessed that.
No.
I mean, not in a million years would I have thought. It's a stretch to me, but okay.
Yeah.
But there's also the fact that the ladder's resemblance to a gallows makes it more ominous. But as Adam says, you know, there's also the danger of something falling from it.
Mm-hmm.
But the Egyptians apparently thought that one might accidentally spot a god going up or down on a ladder, so they avoided it. You know, so that had to make building pyramids difficult if they didn't have any ladders.
No joke.
You know,
they
avoid using ladders because you might see a god, which I guess was bad.
I guess. I'd be trying to see him.
How the hell did they do it?
I'm telling you, I think it's acoustic resonance. I've been saying that for a while.
Something. I know somebody wasn't dragging an 80-ton stone up a damn ladder.
No. Or up a sand ramp. Yeah. I don't believe that either.
Now, have you ever broken a mirror, Adam?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think I have.
I have. You know, not on purpose. But, you know, when it happened, I remember going, oh, man. You know, that
crap.
Mm-hmm. 7 years is a long time, you know, but
yep, exactly.
But why? What does it matter? So the belief that a broken mirror brings bad luck most likely has its origins in the fact that reflections of ourselves are uncanny and often unnerving, particularly if you're having a bad hair day. You know, so humans have long had bad associations with mirrors. For example, the Greek myth of Narcissus, or the idea that a crack in a mirror would somehow break its charm or trap your soul. So if you know the story of Narcissus fell in love with his own reflection, looking into the water, and he got too close and he fell in and drowned. Okay. Right. So it was all about the reflection. It wasn't because it wasn't a mirror. In the story of Narcissus. So it's about the reflection. And since the mirror shows you a pretty true reflection of yourself, breaking it will most likely cause problems. But it was the ancient Romans that contributed the notion that a broken mirror would bring 7 years of bad luck, since it was believed that only poor health would cause a mirror to crack. And the number seven was seen by the Romans as the number of years required to complete a full life cycle of sickness and renewal. Where did they come up with that?
Yeah, right.
But as a result, a broken mirror meant you were headed towards a death spiral that might take 7 years to pull yourself out of. But then those same Romans felt that you could prevent that horrible outcome by gathering the broken pieces of mirror and burying them by the moonlight. So I didn't do that.
No.
And I'm probably not going to if I ever break another one.
That's a lot.
If you ever see me burying something in the moonlight,
run.
I need a lawyer. That's my
Exactly.
I don't want to dig a hole. If I'm digging a hole in the moonlight, something bad's happened.
Yep. You need a lawyer and a friend to help.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Friends help you move. Good friends help you move bodies. You ever seen that?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Now, here's one that we all remember from being a kid. Step on a crack, break your mother's back. I don't know if anybody ever thought, I'm really going to break my mother's back. But this superstition involves something cracked or broken being associated with bad luck. That's the superstition of stepping on a crack as foretelling or even causing harm to a family member. But like mirrors, cracks in the earth or on a sidewalk or anywhere have long been seen as portals to the realm of the supernatural. For both good and evil, to step on those cracks might be to invite or release unwelcome spirits into the world that are ready to do someone harm.
Hmm.
I'd not ever heard that either.
No.
About cracks being considered a portal and that stepping on them would release something.
No,
I'd never come across that before.
No, I mean, for my whole life, I've heard step on a crack, break your mama's back thing. But never that it was a portal. Like you said, I know it. I don't know how to feel about that.
Yeah, it's kind of odd, but if that's where it began. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you said you had a lucky coin.
Mm-hmm.
Well, have you ever picked up a lucky penny?
Yeah.
The idea that finding a penny would bring good luck also originates in folk beliefs. In this case, it's based on the idea that metal, regarded by many ancient cultures as quite valuable, was sent by the gods to protect those who they favored. So pennies being made from metal, if you find them, then you'll have good fortune. But some say the luck could break either way. And if you find a penny tails up, you should turn it over and leave it for the next person, or you will actually have bad luck. Have you heard that before? That
no.
Turn it over? I can remember the first time I heard that. There was a penny and it was somebody I was working with and they go, "Oh, look, a penny." And they went, I was like, it's on tails. And they reached down and flipped it over. And they said, "Now you pick it up." I'm like, "What? I don't want it." And they were like, no, you pick it up. I can't pick it up. Why? Well, because I flipped it over. So now you have to pick it up or I'm going to have bad luck. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? I was like,
this
is taking the whole lucky penny thing to a whole nother level. I thought they were making it up. But over the years, I've heard other people say similar things and either just completely ignore a penny that is on tails or, they will flip it over with the idea that somebody will come along behind them and pick it up. And when it's on heads.
Now that I'm thinking about it, I have heard people say, "Ooh, a lucky penny. Oh, it's on tails," and then just leave it.
Yeah.
But I've not heard the going as far as, flip it over Now you pick it up. They just wouldn't pick it up if it wasn't on heads.
Yeah, right.
But
just leave it.
Right. I'm just, oh, a penny. I've always been the guy, oh, a lucky penny, and I pick it up. Didn't pay attention to heads or tails.
Yeah, I don't pick up anything less than a quarter.
Yeah, nowadays. Yeah.
It's what inflation did to you.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, a lucky half dollar.
Right, right. How about lucky horseshoes? Yeah. Yep. I mean, I think everybody, you know, considers horseshoes to be lucky. This is another object that's thought to be lucky. The earliest origins of the horseshoe's function as a good luck charm reside in its U shape when it's seen upside down, and the invocation of the pagan moon goddess Diana and her, dig this, sacred vulva.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Now we're talking.
I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I would remember that if I had heard that before.
Yeah.
And what's funny is it was just a couple weeks ago. We were somewhere and someone had a horseshoe over their door and it was upside down.
I was about to say that we have a couple horseshoes and we've talked about putting them up over the door.
And so Madison looks at me and goes, oh yeah, horseshoe upside down. She's like, I thought they had to be like U shaped in order to be lucky. And I looked at it and I was like, yeah, I don't know. I've seen horseshoes over doors. I've never paid attention to whether they were turned up or turned down.
Well, I actually looked that up and it depends on, cause I was like, does it need to be up? Can it be down? How does it need to be? And you may have this, so I apologize if I'm stepping on something, but it depends on what you're wanting to do. Are you wanting to dump luck on the person coming in? Or are you wanting to collect luck for the house?
Mm.
So up is the U is collecting luck. Down is luck
pouring out
on the people walking through the door.
Huh. Oh, that makes sense. I like it. But what was it about horseshoes? So like pennies, metal was seen as being valuable and magical. Iron in particular was thought by early Europeans as something capable of warding off evil spirits. I mean, we've heard that before, you know, this is made of pure iron, you know, it'll kill a vampire or, you know, you can nail some kind of goblin's foot to the floor and they won't be able to move, you know? Also as with the Romans and the lucky number 7, horseshoes frequently featured 7 nail holes. So this, again, with the, you know, it's a horseshoe that's lucky. It's iron and it has 7 holes in it. So even more. Now, the most famous story of a horseshoe bringing good luck refers to the story of Saint Dunstan, who apparently worked as a blacksmith prior to attaining sainthood. The story goes that one day the devil rode into Dunstan's shop requesting new shoes for his horse. Why didn't he ask for new shoes for himself?
Right. Why is he riding a horse if he's
But Dunstan, recognizing the devil, played it off nonchalantly, and rather than nailing the shoes to the horse, nailed one to the devil's foot instead. In agony, the devil agreed never to enter a house with a horseshoe nailed above the door if Dunstan would simply agree to remove the shoe. So that's where the idea, at least this is one of the stories, of why you would put a horseshoe over your door. It's, you know, it wards off the devil.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting. And we just had a recent one of these, Friday the 13th. So, but like the number 7 for Romans, magical significance has been attached to the number 13 but this time it's unlucky rather than lucky. The number 12 has frequently been seen as a positive. So 12 months of the year, 12 signs of the zodiac, and 12 days of Christmas, the 12 tribes of Israel. So it, you know, 12 just makes these frequent appearances. Which naturally making it the nearest neighboring number to the north negative. I don't know that I understand what that means.
Not yeah. really, no.
To the north negative, huh? If any of you listening understand what that sentence meant, then let us know. I'm not sure I follow that. Anyway, but like other superstitions around the Last Supper, the 13th is also seen as unlucky because, once again, the great betrayer, Judas Iscariot, was the 13th member of the dinner party that led to Christ's crucifixion. How did they know he was the 13th? Did he show up last? I mean, you know, there were 13 of them there, but did he just get tagged with the number 13? I don't know.
I can't remember if he was the last one to join. I can't remember from.
But yeah, it's like, man, he couldn't catch a break. You know, he's spilling salt everywhere. He's the 13th person, you know. But in addition, on Friday the 13th of October 1307, King Philip IV of France arrested and put to death hundreds of Templar knights. So that one seems.
That's the one I've heard.
Yeah. I mean, that makes a lot more sense because just because of what we know of the Knights Templar and the processes and the ceremonies and the things that they were involved in, it, you know, the fact that a superstition like this comes out of that, I totally buy it. You know, if it was Friday the 13th when, you know, a bunch of the Knights Templar were put to death, yeah, that's where this came from, I think.
Yep. That's the one I've always heard.
Now, we talked about black cats at the very beginning. I've got a black cat. It crosses my path all the time. Okay. I don't, maybe that's why I'm not a millionaire yet, is because I've got a black cat.
Maybe.
But cats have often been associated with good luck rather than bad. And you know, cats were even worshiped as gods in ancient Egypt. We've heard about that before. Mm-hmm. But things changed for the dark colored cats around the Dark Ages, when in 1232 AD, a papal bull by Pope Gregory the IX declared them as an incarnation of Satan. So this is according to People magazine, that is Pope Gregory the IX. That's what he did. So dark colored cats were an incarnation of Satan. So things only went downhill for black cats from there, because people of the Middle Ages were known to burn them in bonfires on holy days like Shrove Tuesday, the first Sunday of Lent, and even on Easter. And with the Puritans in America connecting them to the practice of witchcraft. So, you know, it was just one thing after another with these black cats, you know. To me, black cats are the coolest. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's funny. Have you ever heard about the color of the cat shows like its personality? You know, orange cats tend to be kind of crazy, and you know, black cats are usually a little more, you know, sneaky but loving, and you know, they do weird things, and
I haven't heard that, but it makes sense.
Yeah, and the like the tiger stripe, the black and gray tiger stripe cats, you know, they have an even different personality. Now that's true to a degree because I've got a black and gray striped cat and I've got a black cat and they are totally different. I mean, there's nothing similar about them at all, in their personalities. The black cat absolutely adores Amanda. She will come and find Amanda. She at night when we're in the bed watching TV, Betty comes up and will climb up into the bed and lay right in Amanda's lap. When we start to kind of go down to go to sleep, she goes down to the foot of the bed on my side because Amanda says she moves too much, so it bugs the cat, and I don't. So the cat sleeps at my feet. This is every night, okay? But Betty also kind of talks to you. Like, she'll meow to you, you know, like, look at you and meow. Lucy, the black and gray cat, she doesn't meow hardly at all, ever. You know, and she makes that weird guttural sound if there's another cat outside. But that's about it. Betty, she chirping and meowing all the time, you know, but it's always geared towards one of us. You know, it's not, you know, I've always heard cats don't meow to one another. They meow to humans. You know, it's kind of weird, but I don't know. But, you know, the black color as well has been associated with evil and death. So that, you know, you just get one little thing after another, and next thing you know, black cats are bad luck.
Sure.
Especially when you light them and you hold them in your fingers and you don't throw them. Oh, wait a minute, that's the firecracker.
Mm-hmm. But though that's bad luck too.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible luck. Now, those are probably some of the most common ones that you hear, but there are some that are really, really out there, that I've never even heard of before. But you know, just to touch on one that everybody knows, crossing your fingers, is supposed to bring the finger crosser good luck. That comes from pagan times in Western Europe when the practice of making a cross with your own and the index finger of another person was thought to concentrate the forces of good spirits and seal a pact or a wish with the fellow crosser. So you cross your fingers. Okay. That's like pinky swear. Okay. That's just like where the pinky swear thing come from. You're crossing your fingers. You're making a bond. You're sealing it. So crossing your own fingers, that also brings good luck. You know, you cross your fingers when you're hoping something's going to happen. I don't know where it came up where if you could lie if you crossed your fingers and it didn't count.
I don't know.
But
that seems like a newer addition to
it. How about this? Chewing gum at night. You ever heard that? It's bad luck to chew gum at night. Never heard that before. I always heard if you chew gum at night, you're liable to choke on it.
Yeah.
Which that would be terrible. What about the number four?
And don't fall asleep with Zen in your lip.
Yeah, that's bad too.
Mm-hmm. Not bad luck, just bad for you.
But what the number four being bad luck? This is from China.
I was going to say, I've heard there's a certain number, and I thought it might be four from another country, but...
Yep. It says, for the Chinese, the number four is a no-no due to the similarity in its pronunciation in Chinese to the word for death.
Mm.
But it did not tell me what that word was.
You wouldn't be able to pronounce
that's
it
that's
anyway,
probably
man.
Exactly right. How about this? Tucking your thumbs in when you go into a cemetery.
I've heard
this
about
one is
this,
from but... is from Japan, and like the fear of the word four in China, the Japanese tuck their thumbs in when in a cemetery visiting the graves of dead relatives. That comes from the connection between the Japanese word for thumb and its meaning as the parent finger. to tuck one's thumbs inside a cemetery, then you're protecting one's parents from death.
Hmm.
Okay.
I hope you don't have to do that the whole time you're in a cemetery.
You're walking around like this. You can't do nothing. You know, you're like,
That would get old. That would get old. I'm sitting here for a couple seconds and I'm like, okay, I need my thumb.
Now this one comes from South America. If you happen to be on a cleaning spree in Brazil, you will want to steer clear of brooms, or at least be careful. South Americans believe that if your feet are swept over by a broom, you will remain single for the rest of your life.
The curse
can be broken if you immediately spit on the broom. Huh.
And just gross.
They don't really know the origins of this, but the legend has it that a woman who cannot keep house does not a good wife make.
Hmm.
Okay. That's an interesting one, you know.
Don't sweep feet,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. The last one I'll talk about tonight is itchy palms. Okay.
This one comes from the
Caribbean. Now, depending on which palm of yours begins to itch, you may find yourself with a bit of extra spending money or in the red. It's a common belief that an itchy left palm means you will owe money soon, whereas an itchy right palm means money is coming your way.
I've never heard the differentiation between the two. I've just always heard if your palm itches, you're getting money. Didn't matter which one.
I've heard that if your right palm itches, you're going to have money. If the other palm itches, someone's going to come see you. I've heard that. I don't know. This one says if it's your left palm, it means you're going to be paying out some money. If it's your right palm, you're going to be getting some.
That's why my left hand always
itches. There is an explanation as to why the distinction, because the left hand seems to hold passive energy and the right hand has active energy, which symbolically could explain the coming in and out of money.
Hmm.
And plus, you know, the left hand is always considered to be the evil one. You know, it's disrespectful in a lot of cultures to extend your left hand. Not necessarily because it's bad. You know, somebody told me one time it's because you use your left hand to wipe. So that you don't extend your left hand.
In a lot of Middle Eastern countries, that's what it is. And they don't eat with their left hand because of that.
And of course, you know, the Latin for left is sinistra, which is where we get the word sinister. So, you know, there's always been a connection to being left-handedness to being a little shady or, you know, not on the up and up, you know, even evil to an extent.
My great-grandfather was left-handed, but in school, they thought it was bad for him to write left-handed. Mm-hmm. So they forced him to write with his right hand. And even when he died in his 80s, his handwriting was so poor, you could barely read it because they forced him to go right-handed when he was left-handed.
Yeah. But of course, you know, I had a buddy that was left-handed, and I used to watch him write. Oh, it would drive me nuts. I understand why he had to do it, you know, because you're essentially dragging your arm across what you just wrote and you'd smear it. So he, you know, hooked his hand all around and was almost like he was writing back. He was a really good artist too, which was interesting because I'm thinking if I was to do that, I would almost be drawing the letters instead of writing from just muscle memory. And maybe that was why he was, you know, he was a really talented artist. He was also brilliant. You know, so he was one of the smartest people I've ever met. So that's another thing. I always say that left-handed people are smarter. Well, the one that I knew was, But it is kind of neat to look into where these ideas came from. You know, what is the story? Why do we do these things? You know, why are these things passed on, you know, generation after generation, to that, you know, today I'm pitching salt over my shoulder because my grandmother taught me that this is what I'm supposed to do, because her grandmother taught her that that's what you were supposed to do. And so on and so on. And, you know, whether it's, you know, you talking about putting a horseshoe over your door, or somebody carrying a rabbit's foot or a lucky coin, or anything that would be considered some type of talisman that was either going to bring you good luck or protection. You know, I think if you really sit down and look at it, we all do these things, even if it's not overt, you know, even if it's something that no one else would notice about you. We all have those.
And I think
things
even if you think, no, I don't have any of those.
Yeah.
If you were to really sit down and think about it, there's at least one.
I guarantee
that you do.
It.
You have at least one superstition that you may not even be aware is a superstition that you do.
That's right. And when you kind of broaden out the definition, you know, like you said, you know, I never considered Groundhog Day to be anything superstitious, but, you know, by definition, it is. So, you know, I'm interested to find out, you know, if you have a weird superstition or a funny idiosyncrasy that you do, let us know. I mean, I'd love to hear what some people do. I mean, I do weird things too. You know, you play those little games in your head. You know, let us know. And the best place to do that is in our Facebook group. Thousands of people in there, and nobody's going to make fun of you. You know, if you tell us you don't ever wash your underwear, but once a month, and you wear the same pair for good luck, we might make a comment about that. But, you know,
may call you stinky giblets or something, but
it's all in fun. We're not going to make fun of you, call you a nut job or any of that stuff. Everybody in our group wants to hear those really great stories. You know, they want to hear those personal experiences. So jump in there. It's a great place. And don't forget to go check out our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. And there you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise, everything from coffee mugs to, you know, tumblers and stickers and posters and t-shirts. You know, if you can think of it, they've got it there. And we've got several different logos you can choose from. But on our website, you can also listen to the show. You can connect and listen to Graveyard Tales. And you can become a patron. And Adam mentioned it at the top of the show, and we always like to thank everybody who has donated their hard-earned money to the work that Adam and I do. We sincerely appreciate it, and you really, really help us keep going. So, because we're coming up on our time, and I think that may be unlucky. Until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Love espresso, drip coffee, and cold brew? With the Ninja Luxe Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam hands-free from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Luxe Cafe.